Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. And if you love movies, then you love the annual Oscar television broadcast. This Sunday marks the 83rd Academy Awards celebration, and today we're going to predict the winners and discuss a few favorite Oscar moments. With me in the studio is freelance writer Melissa Starker. Thanks for being here, Melissa.
Thank you.
And also in the studio is Nick Chortis, the film critic and feature writer for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
And Drexel Theater's owner, Jeff Frank, who will be hosting his 14th annual Red Carpet Bash this weekend. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, good morning.
And the 10 Best Picture nominees. You know, the favorite about a month ago was The Social Network, but that might not be the case right now. What do you think about The Social Network still being the favorite, Nick?
Well, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, thank goodness. I'd probably put my money on The King's Speech. That seems like that's the one that has a little momentum, a little more momentum right now. Does everyone else agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that's true.
Well, let's. The Social Network had a lot of momentum. I would say about a month ago, it was going to win. Everyone thought so.
Let's start some new momentum right now.
Yeah.
let's start something Toy Story 3.
King's Speech has won a lot of awards. So.
Yeah, let's listen to The Social Network real quick.
People came to Face Mash in a stampede, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't because they saw pictures of hot girls. You can go anywhere on the internet and see pictures of hot girls.
Yeah.
It was because they saw pictures of girls that they knew. People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles, whatever you can visit, browse around. Maybe it's someone you just met at a party. But I'm not talking about a dating site. I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
So The Social Network won a lot of awards at the beginning of the awards season, I would say, and then The King's Speech kind of came up later. Melissa, did you think The Social Network was going to be popular when you saw it, like, from the beginning? Did you think it was going to be an award-caliber film?
Well, it had a lot of buzz before it ever opened, mm-hmm. and the fact that you've got David Fincher as director and Aaron Sorkin as screenwriter, that's a pretty high pedigree. And it seems like when it got into Critics Award season, that's when you were seeing a ton of awards for Social Network. And as it got more into straight awards, you know, award show season, is when the King's Speech really started picking up the momentum.
And Nick, you want to bring back the momentum for the Social Network?
Oh, I wouldn't mind. It's like Melissa mentioned, it had a lot of. It had a lot of oomph even beforehand because of Fincher and Sorkin, so it's not terribly surprising. I mean, the movie, of course, had to turn out to be good, and also, you know, when it comes to the Oscars, the movies have to be, or usually have to be, fairly successful at the box office as well, and it certainly was that. So,
Jeff, do you think it's a race between The Social Network and The King's Speech at this point?
Definitely. That's the film. What I read recently, I think when the Academy went to 10 nominees for Best Picture, they changed the voting rules, so it's no longer necessarily the film that gets the most first place votes. They vote in order of preference, so they vote their number one pick all the way down to their number 10 pick, and then if no film gets 50% or more of the first place votes, then they throw out a lot of the ballots that vote for films that are way down on a list, and from then on it becomes sort of a popularity contest on who's got the best winning percentage. So I think that favors, in my mind, King's Speech, because the age range of the Academy voters is 50, the average age is 57, and I think that film appeals to an older demographic. So I think right now I would say King's Speech is pretty close to a lock, but then you never know. Look what happened last year with the Hurt Locker winning. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Do they get to vote again then if they knock out the ones that are
How
does that work?
Their votes went in this past Tuesday, and they actually happened after the Golden Globes and after most of the other awards programs and awards were put out. And again, I think that favors The King's Speech because of all this last-minute momentum the film has gotten.
Well, let's listen to The King's Speech. In this scene, Lionel Logue, played by Jeffrey Rush, is trying to motivate King George.
You've destroyed the happiness of my family all for the sake of ensnaring a star patient you couldn't possibly hope to assist. It'll be like Mad King George the Stammerer, who let his people down so badly in their hour of need. What are you doing? Get up! You can't sit there! Get up!
Why not? It's a chair.
No, that is not a chair. That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names on it.
Listen to me!
Listen to you? By what right?
Because I have a right to be. I have a voice!
Yes, you do.
So
Is The King's Speech a perfect Oscar movie overall, or is it little bits and pieces of it? Melissa, what do you think?
It's perfect Oscar bait. It's a British period piece. It's got three stars who I believe have five Oscar nominations between them. Colin Firth had already been nominated last year for A Single Man. A lot of people felt he should have won. He didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just the kind of movie that when you think Oscar, you think of something like this.
Mm-hmm. Nick, did you think The King's Speech, I'm not sure if you think, do you think it should win, or just do you think it will win?
Oh, I think it will win, and I certainly wouldn't be upset if it did win. I enjoyed it a great deal. I mean, I liked it a lot. I think it was hugely entertaining, if nothing else. And there's a lot of good performances in it. So
yeah. Now let's talk about those performances. Colin Firth is nominated for Best Actor, and a lot of people have been talking about that he's the front runner in that category. But there are a lot of strong actors in the Best Actor category. Jeff, who do you think is the strongest in Best Actor?
I definitely think it's Colin Firth. I mean, most news reports have him as a lock on winning. And you just look at, you know, Jeff Bridges won last year, so it's hard to feel that Academy voters would vote for him. I think James Franco film was a fabulous performance, but a lot of people just, you know, had problems with the blood and the story in 127 hours. Jesse Eisenberg, you know, he's just a little too young, I think, to win Best Actor. I think he's going to win an Oscar, but not for this role. So, and not too many people saw Bardem in Beautiful. So I think it's Firth will win the Oscar for sure.
Melissa, what do you think?
I think that's all very good points. I think he's right. Colin Firth is pretty much a lock. And again, you know, the fact that Jeff Bridges won last year, same thing. He probably won't win again this year. Personally, I love Colin Firth. I am among many women of, you know, certain age and taste that have a thing for Colin Firth.
Mr. Darcy.
Well, honestly, I got to say Single Man was the one that I was like, okay, now I get it. Yeah. But James Franco basically carried 127 hours. It was his film alone for most of the
run. He's the only one in the movie.
He's the only one in it, except for some flashbacks in the beginning of the film. And you know, the fact that he could keep you engaged in that cave for an hour and a half. Unfortunately, I do think that also Jeff was right in that some people were put off by the subject matter and didn't really necessarily give the film a chance. But it's all such a terrific film, and he was so good in it.
Can a movie that has blood in a dramatic scene like 127 Hours, can that win an Oscar? Nick, what do you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, well, now
no
I'm trying to think of examples.
No,
yeah,
Country
No Country for Old
Men.
Sure, okay. That had plenty of blood. I feel sort of the same way Melissa feels about Franco. I have the same feelings about Eisenberg. I mean, I think, you know, he certainly wasn't alone in that film like Franco was for much of it, but I think he dominated it. And to me, that was the most fascinating character that I saw this year. I mean, such a mix of, I mean, you like him, you really, really dislike him, and it goes back and forth. And Eisenberg really, really pulled that off. I have no idea at all if it's anything like the real Mark Zuckerberg, but as far as a character in a film goes, I thought he was the most fascinating.
I think the Academy really loves people with afflictions, though, and I think
sure.
Back to all the great films like Daniel Day-Lewis and My Left Foot and all the other films. I just think that's the trend that that I kind of look at it as what the Academy will vote.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Social Network character's affliction is crippling insecurity.
Smart,
so that's not a favorite.
And not being very social, basically.
Right. There's that great monologue in Tropic Thunder about what the Academy favors, and that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurovich. Joining me in the studio is Nick Chortis. He's the film critic and feature writer for the Columbus Dispatch. Also, Drexel Theater's owner Jeff Frank and freelance writer Melissa Starker. 614-292-8513. Who do you think will win an Oscar? Who would you like to see win? Join our conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org.
And let's talk about the Best Actress category. I've heard a lot of people talking about Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, but I'm not hearing as much about Best Actress. Is that because Natalie Portman has it locked and everyone thinks so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's
Melissa, tell us about Natalie Portman's performance.
Well, I mean, it was a good year for her. She seemed to be picking up a lot of buzz, but the amount of sheer work that went into this role, first off, nearly a year of ballet training, and then you combine that with the fact that she pretty much has to play a very major transition for her character and really does a full emotional spectrum, but at the beginning is very quiet, very internal, and, you know, by the end literally has to transform. And, I mean, you know, you got to have respect for that.
What do you think of Best Actress? Is it Natalie Portman's pick?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think I don't think there's any doubt. In fact, you know, of all the categories, it's as much as a lock as any others.
I think Annette Bening has a real shot because, well, one, she's on the Board of Governors of the Academy, so that holds a little bit of weight.
Annette Bening was in the movie The Kids Are All Right, and she won a few other awards, right?
I don't recall if she's won any awards for that, but she's been nominated for 3 Oscars and never won before, so that certainly helps her cause.
Jeff makes a good point. I should never say lock.
Right.
at any time during these interviews.
Yeah. So, and her body of work. You know, body of work at the Academy Awards really means something, just like Jeff Bridges last year. And so I think she could be the real surprise. I would love it personally if Jennifer Lawrence won, because I was just blown away by that performance in Winter's Bone. I think it's, you know, again, she sort of carries that movie, even though there's other great performances. But I think it could be Annette Bening. I think that's what's good about this Oscars is that if they were all locks, nobody would watch the show.
Right. And you mentioned Winter's Bone. That was one of the surprises in the Best Picture category. There's 10 nominees, and Winter's Bone is one of them, and it's got a few other nominations. In this scene, Ree Dolly's crystal meth-making father skips bail and goes missing. And if she doesn't find him, her family is going to lose their home.
I got a real bad need to talk with them.
And he ain't got no need to talk to you.
But I need to. I really, really got to, ma'am, please. Some of our blood at least is the same. Ain't that supposed to mean something?
Ain't you got no men could do this?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Winter's Bone has been a surprise movie. It's the movie few people have heard of, but all the critics love. Mm-hmm. Is that what you think, Melissa?
It's well, it is a terrific film. I mean, it's very immersive, this story of this young woman who basically on her own has to enter into this very violent and hostile and male-dominated world to try and find her father, even though most of the people that she's dealing with are blood relations of some sort or another. She's still in this alien world, and you know, it's the kind of thing you don't really see on the big screen that often. And the fact that it had such a great performance from Jennifer Lawrence and also from John Hawkes, who is nominated as well for Best Supporting Actor, you know, it really sucks you in.
Yeah, I've heard that John Hawkes is one of the front runners for Best Supporting Actor, which is also a strong category.
Yeah, it's a very strong category. And, I mean, I would love to see him win it. I just don't know if he has enough name recognition, if the film has enough people who've seen it to win. And you know, Christian Bale is such a force in The Fighter. It's going to be hard to top.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I like Lawrence's performance in Winter's Bone, you know, the one I kept thinking about, you know, days afterwards was Hawks. I mean, that was the performance I really liked. So when the nominations came out, you know, I was really pleased to see him on there. I don't think he'll win. I think Melissa's right. It's kind of Bales to lose at this point.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides Weekend. Right after this break, we're going to continue to discuss the Oscars. What is your favorite Oscar-nominated movie? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll also talk about some favorite Oscar moments and those Oscar parties. This is 89.7 NPR News.
A big week in Chicago as Rahm Emanuel got elected the first new mayor in 20 years, but observers say the election may not have been legitimate. Some say Rahm was put over the top by 40,000 votes cast by refugee legislators from Wisconsin. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as we try to make everybody welcome on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturday morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on the next Science Friday as we talk about a new study that says extended cell phone use can affect your brain, plus a new view of how nerve cells work, and why once scientists tried to make people believe they had three arms. It's all on the next Science Friday from NPR.
This afternoon at 2 on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. With me in the studio is Nick Chortis from the Columbus Dispatch, Jeff Frank with the Drexel Theaters, and freelance writer Melissa Starker. 614-292-8513. I'm giving out the wrong phone number. Don't know why. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org to tell us your favorite Oscar moment. And another category that I wanted to talk about is the documentary category. This is a category that a lot of people have opinions on. There's some great films nominated in there. One of them is called Exit Through the Gift Shop. And in this clip, one of the artists featured in the documentary talks about his art.
Most normal art is built to last like hundreds of years. It's cast in bronze or it's oil on canvas, but street art has a short lifespan, so it needed documenting. You know, we all needed someone who knew how to use a camera.
Jeff, what did you think of Exit Through the Gift Shop? And tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Well, it's about street art, and it's about a famous artist, Banksy, who... you know, many people have never seen him. They don't know, you know, if he's a real person or not, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Is he going to come to the Oscars?
It'd be great, you know. I think it's the most surprise nomination of all the films on this list. I mean, it just blew me away that the Academy would recognize this because it was just such an amazing year for documentaries. You know, some major documentaries that had big Oscar campaigns aren't on this list. And I don't even recall whether Exit, you know, had much of an Oscar campaign. But it would be great if this film won. I'm not sure. It's a real dark horse, I think. But I think it adds a lot of excitement to that category this year.
Melissa, do you like the documentary feature category? What do you think of it? It's a lot of movies that few people have seen.
Right. I mean, it's a really good category. And I mean, some of them at this point are available on DVD. I know Restrepo played on the National Geographic Channel. Gasland has gotten a fair amount of play on HBO because it was originally an HBO documentary. I'm with Jeff. I loved Exit Through the Gift Shop. I think it's a really terrific film, both as a chronicle of street art and as something of a prank, because there's been a lot of controversy surrounding the people that are depicted in the film and whether it's being entirely truthful in those depictions. So, I mean, in a way, it kind of skirts the category, which is kind of cool. And there's been a lot of talk about whether or not Banksy is going to show up. The clip that you played was him and his voice is disguised, and he's always seen in shadow in the film because he's very protective of his true identity. There's been a lot of hubbub over whether or not he's going to show up, who would accept if it would win. I agree with Jeff. I don't think that it's going to win because it is a little bit off the wall a bit. And also because it doesn't necessarily portray Los Angeles art lovers in the best light. I'd say it looks to me like it's between Restrepo and Inside Job. Restrepo is a really strong Iraq documentary by Sebastian Younger. And Inside Job, Charles Ferguson has already won for No End in Sight. He has a very stylish way of presenting his information, very slick and Hollywood friendly, and also the financial collapse and a lot of people losing their savings and things like that is actually, you know, a subject that hit really close to home with a lot of celebrities. So,
And Nick, what do you think of the documentary feature category?
Well, I think Melissa makes a great point, and I was going to say the same thing, that I'm not even sure it's a documentary, which probably won't help it, but it would be great if it won because it was a terrific film. But just looking at this list, you know, I've seen everything but Gasland, so I can't comment on that. But I really loved Restrepo. I mean, talk about a completely involving film. I mean, you really kind of disappear into it and you know, feel like in some ways that you're with these guys who are in incredibly difficult circumstances. So that would be my pick, but we'll see. Maybe Exit will get it.
What do you think, Jeff, what do you think the category is that everyone waits for, besides Best Picture, because everyone wants to know who the Best Picture winner is going to be, but is there one category that everyone is just, whenever they're sitting at home and watching, that they can't wait to see who wins?
Oh, you know, the order of the show really dictates that as well. I mean, you know, Best Actor and Best Actress and Best Picture are the last three, and, you know, they always bring out, you know, last year's winners, and I think that, you know, that's the real excitement of the Oscars. Plus, you know, what's going to go wrong? You know, what jokes are going to fall flat? Is somebody going to do something, you know, out of the, you know, just crazy fun? The year there was a streaker when David Niven was a presenter on stage or whatever. So I guess the show this year is going to be very different. We've got new producers and putting the show together. I've heard they're going to do a lot of musical numbers. I don't know if that's good or not, but because they've fallen pretty flat in years past, but we'll see. And so I think, but, you know, the other thing I think that people really like about the Academy Awards is the red carpet arrivals, just the interviews on the red carpet, seeing all the stars, you know, outside of their movies, making comments, you know, what they're wearing, the fashion. I mean, that's the major part of the show, I think, more than even the awards, is just the whole aura of being in Hollywood and seeing the stars come out and who's there. So,
and Oscar.com, it has a list of favorite Oscar moments. Here's one. Julia Roberts wins her first Oscar for the movie Erin Brockovich.
I'm so happy. Thank you. I have a television, so I'm going to spend some time here to tell you some things. And sir, you're doing a great job, but you're so quick with that stick, so why don't you sit? Because I may never be here again. I love it up here.
So Julia Roberts winning and very excited. Whenever you watch the Oscar acceptance speeches, some of them are really funny, some of them are really long, some of them are full of tears.
Some of them are really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes.
Alfred Hitchcock had the shortest. He just got up and said thank you and walked off.
Well, didn't Joe Pesci do that too?
I don't remember Joe doing that.
Melissa, what do you think makes a good Oscar moment?
Well, actually, I think Julia Roberts had a little moment in there that would fit in my idea, which is self-deprecating. I think self-deprecating works very well. You are being watched by millions, tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of people. You have already received this great honor. You know, you don't want to be going on about what incredible relevance this has beyond you. You know, it's a personal moment. You might as well enjoy it. And, you know, avoiding the laundry list of publicists and managers and things, if they can do that, that's usually a good thing. It's been interesting, you know, as you're building up to the Oscars, you get all these different award ceremonies, and you can see the front runners honing what they're doing. And, you know, Natalie Portman kind of got some flack, I think, at the Golden Globes for a goofy laugh. She's probably going to be a little careful about that if she wins on Sunday. Colin Firth has just been sort of, he's got that self-deprecating thing down perfectly. He's been sort of working on a thing through Golden Globes.
Royal.
And BAFTAs.
Kingly.
So, you know, succinct and sincere.
Well, let's. Melissa has a favorite Oscar moment, and I think it's pretty sincere. Glenn Hazard and Markéta Irglova won for Best Original Song for the film Once, and Glenn gave a nice short speech, and then the show quickly went to commercial. But later on, host Jon Stewart went a little off script.
The winners of Best Song, Markéta Irglova, didn't get a chance to say her thank you, so I just wanted to bring her out here again real quick, just to get a chance to... Do you want to come out real quick? I'm sorry. Enjoy your moment.
Hi, everyone. I just want to thank you so much. This is such a big deal, not only for us, but all, for all other independent musicians and artists that spend most of their time struggling. And the fact that we're standing here tonight is just a proof that no matter how far out your dreams are, it's possible.
So she had a lot of heart.
She had a lot of heart. And both her and Glenn Hansard, both, especially him actually, made a really strong point of make art. Make art. That's literally, he said it twice in his speech. So it was just like urging the people in the auditorium and the people watching, you know, do something, make something creative, which you got to love that. And also, yeah, you know, they can be awfully quick with that baton sometimes, and you feel for these people that have this moment. And, you know, you can say what you want about Jon Stewart's sense of humor or his politics, but he's a class act. And I thought that was a really nice move on his part to bring her back out.
And, Jeff, you also have a favorite Oscar moment. Roberto Benigni won for Best Foreign Language Film for the film Life is Beautiful.
Come here. Thank you. This is a moment of joy. And I want to kiss everybody because you are the image of the joy. And he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity sunrise, they said the poet. And this is wonderful to be here. Wonderful. I feel like now to dive in this ocean of gratitude, of generosity. This is too much.
And, of course, before he made that speech, he came onto the stage in an interesting way, too.
Oh, yeah, he didn't use the aisle, which was, right. You know, the most fun thing. You know, I've been putting on these Oscar shows for a long time now, 14, 15 years, so I never really get to see the Academy Awards. But I did see, and I think this goes back prior to when I was putting these shows on. So just to see him climb over everybody and climb over the seats.
He climbed on the chairs.
Climbed on the chairs.
Bunny hopped onto the stage.
Yeah. And just the, you know, he mentions it right there. He wants to kiss everybody and dive into the audience. And this was the greatest joy I've ever seen at the Academy Awards of a winner. I mean, he just was so unbelievable, and it's such a fabulous moment. I mean, that's what it's all about. And boy, I hope he makes another film and gets back nominated, because
so that he can make a fun.
Yeah, he's just so hysterically funny, and you never know what's going to come, what he's going to say. He's a real wild card and a very creative guy and a funny actor.
Nick, do you find yourself, just as someone who loves movies, do you watch the Oscars for an Oscar moment, or are you looking for something funny or for someone to screw up?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately you wouldn't watch if you weren't entertained. I mean, no matter how much you love movies, you want the show to be produced in a way where you're not going to be sitting at home getting too bored, maybe when sound mixing comes on, not to...
Oh, the poor sound mixers.
No, they've had some fun with those categories, too, in the last couple of years. So, no, I'm not necessarily looking for specific Oscar moments. I mean, it's nice when they occur, but, you know, it's such a long show. It's such a long haul. It's scheduled for 3 hours, but it'll probably go, you know, at least a few minutes over that.
At least.
And I feel for our copy editors at the paper, but... But yeah, it you know, you want the overall experience to be an entertaining one.
And the overall experience really, you know, hinges on the host of the show. You mentioned to me, Nick, that you are interested in the hosting of the Oscars, and a favorite is comedian Steve Martin. Here he is hosting in 2001.
That is what is great about show business. It's a tolerant business. It's the most tolerant in the world. You have black people, white people, Asians, Hispanics, Jews, Christians, all working together. All because of a single common love, publicity.
And that was one of the tamer comments that I could put on the radio that Steve Martin said. So this year's hosts, Anne Hathaway, James Franco.
Right.
When I heard that, I thought, interesting.
Yeah, I thought, you know, that was my response. I suppose in a way it's like when Hugh Jackman hosted. I mean, it's not a... you know, comedian per se. It's not a stand-up or someone who makes their living getting laughs, although Franco has done a lot of that lately. But I like a host that can kind of take the air out of the room a little bit. Usually I think that's best done when it is an insider like Steve Martin, who's been in a ton of movies. Maybe works less well when it's someone like David Letterman, who is a, you know, quote unquote outsider, and that he works in television and not film, except for Cabin Boy.
Well, David Letterman is the one whenever you think of a bad Oscar host. It's
yeah,
not
I
everyone
even think
always
he was
brings
that
up.
Bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Letterman a lot, but yeah. So I mean, I'll just be really interested to see. I mean, I imagine there'll be a lot of pre-recorded segments, I would think, and you know, we know Franco's chops as a comedian. I'm not completely sold on Hathaway, but we'll see.
Well, so what do you think? Do you need to be a comedian to host the Oscars?
Well, I think having a sense of humor is pretty key. As Jeff had mentioned, you know, if David Niven wasn't quick and didn't have a sense of humor, when someone streaked behind him, he had this great line about, you know, someone getting their best line or getting their best laugh, stripping everything off and showing everyone their shortcomings. And, you know, you got to have that kind of quick wit. I don't know about Anne Hathaway. I mean, she's done comedy. She's done it pretty well. For me, it's all about Franco because he's such a wild card between being a strong dramatic actor and a strong comedy actor. He's an installation artist. He's a filmmaker himself. He's tried all kinds of wacky things, and so it'll be interesting to see how he rolls with the punches.
So, you know,
and I've met him too, and he's
oh, you've met James Franco?
He's very down to earth. I mean, in person, he's very, you know, he wants to know about. He's very interested in who he's talking to. So I think that'll come out a lot in the show, and I think he's a great choice. But I think, you know, I'm not again sold on Anne Hathaway as a host. I do like the fact that they're using actors and rather than, you know, talk show comedians. I think it. Although I love Steve Martin myself, and think he did a great job, and. But I like using actors, and you know, I thought Billy Crystal. I think they should go back and have Billy Crystal convince, you know, pay him a lot of money, because I think he did, you know, the best job ever. Just to have him come and do a song before the show, it'd be great.
And we're down to our last couple of minutes here talking about the Oscars, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention Oscar parties. There are a lot of them happening everywhere and all around Columbus. I know people have them in their homes. And also the Gateway Theater is having a red carpet celebration. The Grandview Theater is having an Oscar viewing party. Studio 35 in Clintonville is showing the Oscars on the big screen, too. We have links to all of those parties and events at WOSU.org/allsides. And Jeff, you're in your 14th year of the red carpet bash. What keeps it going? People are just loving the Oscars.
Yeah, I think the fact that you get to walk at our show, you get to walk down a red carpet, and we have paparazzi and rabid movie fans who want to get your autograph, and we kind of rate. You know, we have fashion commentators, and I think this year we're having somebody do a sort of a Joan Rivers impersonation. So that all is fun. But I think that it really comes down to, you know, when you're at an Oscar show, watching the Oscars up on a big screen, you almost feel like you're there, because, you know, what is the Oscars? You're watching an audience watch some people up on a stage talk about movies and clips and a few musical numbers. But so when you're in a darkened theater, you really feel part of that audience, and I think that what makes it so magical. And of course, you can win a lot of great prizes, and it's just a lot of fun, good food. And you don't, you know, if you do it, go out, you don't have to do the dishes, or, you know, nobody's ruined your coffee table books or whatever. So it's a lot of fun to get out with friends and celebrate this night.
And Nick, in our last minute, what are you looking forward to whenever you are watching the Oscars on Sunday? What category are you waiting for?
Oh,
winner?
Well, I'm always real interested in the screenplay categories. Mm-hmm. This year in particular, I'm interested in the best animated feature category, because I think there's, you know, three really strong ones. I liked How to Train Your Dragon a lot. I love Toy Story 3, one of my absolute favorites of the year. But The Illusionist was maybe my favorite movie of the year. I don't I don't think it has a shot, but I'm very pleased it was nominated, almost as if I had something to do with its creation. But that's a category I'm really looking forward to seeing.
And Melissa, what about you?
I would say I'm right there with Nick. The screenplay category is going to be pretty interesting. Animated feature as well. I'm always curious about the shorts categories just because it's kind of interesting, but I got to give some love to the red carpet. I have to admit, I'm a big fashion sucker, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing what's out there this year.
Well, that ties very nicely into our next segment. That's all the time we have for our Oscar discussion. Thank you to Jeff Frank, the owner of the Drexel Theaters. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
And thanks to freelance writer Melissa Starker. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Nick Chortis, film critic for The Dispatch. Thank you.
Thank you. Have fun on Sunday.
And when we return from this break, we'll hear the story of a fashion designer who is pursuing his dreams even after being homeless at the age of 14 on the streets of Columbus. More after a break on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk to two women who are up for Oscars this weekend. Melissa Leo's turn as the mom in The Fighter earned her a Best Supporting Actress nomination. Also, Natalie Portman plays an obsessed dancer in Black Swan. She's nominated for Best Actress. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Get caught up with local and national news every Friday night on WOSU-TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record, continuing with the McLaughlin Group, and then Need to Know. Spend your Friday night with WOSU-TV beginning at 8.
Support for 89.7 NPR News is brought to you by the Columbus Dispatch. See what's in it for you. Subscription details are available at dispatch.com.
While the economy in many states sputters, grain farmers in the Great Plains prosper.
If states were stocks, I'd be selling California and buying Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Kansas.
Corn, wheat, and beans cost more, and that's making farmers feel flush. They're out buying pickups and tractors and expanding their farms. Boom times in Nebraska today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. And Nari Manavong is a self-taught clothing designer who went from homelessness to the runway. He grew up right here in Columbus in Wyland Park, and the new film Dressed documents his struggle to make it as a fashion designer in New York City. In this clip from the film, Nari explains his passion.
The most happiest is when I'm designing. My biggest escape. My biggest joy, my biggest moment. I block out this past I've gone through, and I'm in this other world, that I'm in a zone of happiness.
And Nari is joining us by phone, but I know he's in Columbus. Nari, welcome back to Columbus.
Hi, it's great to be back.
And also with us is David Swajewski. He is the film's director. Welcome, David.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
And the film premieres tonight at Drexel Theater. So how did you find Nari and come to decide to make a film about him?
Well, I was working on a project in Cincinnati, and one of the stylists for the commercial that I was working on told me about Nari's story. And I thought right away that it was just an amazing story. So I did a little research. I went back to New York and met Nari, and we went from there.
So what about his story drew you in? You said it was an amazing story just when you met him, and you said, I have to make a movie about this.
Well, I think what it came down to was, fashion, number one, is such a difficult business to get into. It's so competitive. It's one of the most difficult businesses around. And the fact that he was self-taught and he came and overcame so many amazing, difficult childhood problems, that's what really drew me to the story. And his personality, his spirit.
Nari, what did you think about the idea of someone coming up to you and saying, I'd like to make a film about your debut in the fashion world?
Well, I wasn't sure, you know, how to go about it and to also share my story at the same time. So I was, you know, it's like waiting for the right moment, and I thought this was the right moment. You know, in the past, I've been approached by different networks, and then just, again, it's just, I just felt like this was the right moment for me to kind of share my story with David.
And so, Nari, you grew up in Columbus, and tell us a little bit about your history. At the age of 14, you were homeless here in Columbus, living on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so at 14, I was homeless. I grew up on the east side of Columbus, and, you know, it was just really a tough upbringing. My family situation was a little bit dysfunctional. My dad was an alcoholic, and my mom, you know, was abusive towards us, and so was my father. And, you know, my parents, you know, my dad was in and out of jail. And so, you know, no one can pay for the bill. You know, and for us, we were kids, so we didn't know what was going on. And we were evicted, and everything was out of the house. And, you know, and we were just left on our own, pretty much.
And you still ended up going to high school, and you were able to graduate from high school. And then, but how did you figure out that you had this fashion bug in you, that you wanted to become a fashion designer?
Well, you know, one, it was just not having clothes growing up. You know, I was working a few jobs, and I was barely going to school. My senior year, I was still considered a freshman with only 2 credits. So in between, you know, I was using clothes as the disguise, you know, just kind of not allow people to worry about my situation that, you know, felt like everything was okay. And, you know, and to discover fashion, I started looking through Vogue magazine. And I just got really interested in these campaigns I saw and some other feature stories that were in the magazine. And I just was like, wow, you know, these are really cool style. And for me, I was like, I was taking that. I was tearing out the pages in the magazine in Vogue. And I was just really trying to copy their style. And, you know, like, this is how I want to dress. And I would go to secondhand shop and really, you know, just try to feel like I was cool as part of, like, the fashion world that I didn't know about, and going to school, you know, using it as a disguise.
And David, the film shows Nari's struggle to make a collection for Fashion Week, which is the huge fashion show in New York where all the big designers premiere their new collections. But this film is about more than just Fashion Week, and it's about more than just Nari. Tell us about your focus.
Well, what I wanted to do with the story is there's basically 2 storylines. There's Nari's story, and then there's industry experts talking about what it's really like to make it in fashion. But the real key to the story is if you believe in yourself, you have a goal. It really doesn't matter where you come from. It really is about the belief that you have in yourself.
And you also interviewed a lot of people from the fashion industry throughout the film, big names. You know,
people. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you do all of those interviews yourself?
Yes. Yes, we had. You know, a lot of people were interested in doing the film because we took it from a different perspective. Most of the films out there were, you know, big brands or, you know, famous designers. We took it from the point of view of what's it like for a young designer? What's that world look like for someone who just believes in himself, has great determination and talent, but really doesn't have the backing of, you know, a major company or a big brand? So a lot of the industry experts wanted to get involved because it was a different take on the fashion industry. A lot of misconceptions out there about the fashion industry with Project Runway and some of the television shows out there. Everybody thinks it's this fabulous, you know, fun parties, you know, champagne kind of business. But every day it's a struggle. And designers every 6 months have to show a new collection. And you're only as good as your last collection. It's a difficult business. And we wanted to take a look at it from a total different point of view.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News, and joining me for a discussion of the new documentary Dressed, which premieres tonight at Drexel Theater, is Nari Manavong. He is the subject of the movie, and then the film's director, David Swajeski. If you have a comment or a question for our guest, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have about 10 minutes to go, so get that call in, 614-292-8513. And, Nari, as David mentioned, woven into the story are commentary from experts in the fashion industry and some pretty famous people. Let's listen to a clip from Simon Collins. He's the dean of fashion at Parsons in New York.
I think there's only one thing you need to make it, and that's a passion, an absolute passion for being a designer. And if you have that, then you will make it. But interestingly, I don't think you'll find a successful designer who notices that it's hard work. Because it just is. And if it feels like it's hard work, you should probably be doing something else.
Now, Nari, do you agree with that? Because I feel like from watching the movie, I feel like you worked pretty hard.
Yeah, you know, it was me growing up. You know, I worked so many jobs. And I knew that, you know, going to New York City, I was well prepared to really keep working and doing what I really wanted to do. And no matter how hard it was going to be, and I was ready just for this business. But the only thing I have to be honest to say is I wasn't ready to see how tough the fashion business was going to be, you know, after a few years.
In the film, you're trying to create your own line of clothes, and your biggest obstacle is that you have no investor, so you're doing everything on your own. How did you save the money you need? Because you, of all the passions to have, you picked a very expensive one.
Yeah. You know, I did some odd jobs. I worked at a fabric shop. I did some styling gigs. I had made some small stuff as well, like some shirts, and I would sell that. And then when my expenses got double, you know, I didn't know what to do. I kind of went through a little panic mode and reached out to my high school principal, and he was able to help me out. And it was just, you know, there was people around me who really believed in me and really pushed me to, like, allow it to happen without, you know, going to waste.
Now, and in the film, you spend a lot of time in New York in the film, but you do travel back to Columbus in the movie as well. Do you still feel that connection to Columbus, or have you in your mind you just want to move on and forget about your Columbus past?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a big heart for Columbus, you know, Ohio. You know, I represent it pretty well. You know, I mean, I wear my Ohio State T-shirt. So,
yes, you were wearing Ohio State gear in the movie, too. Yeah.
My heart, you know, it started here in Columbus. It doesn't end in Columbus. You know, it's just there's so much pride in me for both Columbus and New York City.
And, David, what you I appreciated your use of text in the film. Instead of having a real narrator, per se, you kind of had some text pop up on the screen to kind of move the story along, just short text. It's not. What made you decide to do that instead of a narrator?
Well, I just wanted to make it look like, you know, the viewer was observing everything that was going on. And I think that what a narrator does, it kind of takes you out of the mode. You know, the story is being told to you. So I use type treatments to kind of break up segments, to kind of, you know, have the viewer stop for a second and think. But I wanted to keep it so that you really just were part of Nari's story. You kind of followed him. You were following along as he went on this journey to, you know, create his fashion line for Fashion Week.
And when you started doing this movie, you didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, obviously, it chronicles him trying to have a show during Fashion Week. And, you know, did you worry that, you know, what was going to happen?
Yes. You know, it's really funny because with a documentary, you just don't know where it's going to go. You know, you start off with an idea, and you know, Nari and I talked, and, you know, I followed Nari, for that time, but you just don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's what's exciting about a documentary and what's really scary about a documentary, because you know, you saw the film, but there's a certain point where, you know, things don't really go so well, and we just didn't know where it was going to go. And, you know, but we wanted to keep it as true to what really happened to him so that the audience could see, and a lot of young designers can really see what it's like to be, you know, if you want to do this as a profession.
And Nari, we're not going to ruin the end or tell anyone what happens, but the film is dedicated to all those who follow their dreams no matter what the odds. Did you worry about your dream crashing or in front of cameras? Did you have a worry about that when you started making the film?
Yeah, I definitely. You know, there's been a few times where I was like, you know what, I don't think I could really continue with this. And, you know, I wrote a note to myself and, you know, the note says, "No, you can do it. Just believe." And it was just like, it was something I carried to really push me along. And it was just, it was that spiritual side of me, and which I needed a lot. So, I mean, there was definitely times when I did want to like pull out and step away for a minute, but knowing me, I couldn't do it at all.
And you are a self-taught designer. Have you, at this point now that it's a couple of years later, have you taken any classes, or are you still just learning as you go along?
I'm learning as I go along. You know, when I first moved to New York City, my first job was at a fabric shop. And I just learned so much, and I connected and met a lot of designers, artists, and I learned so much through them. And, you know, picking up books and learning how to make patterns and know how to drape patterns. It was the skills that I needed, the basic skills that I needed first. And as I was growing and working with different pattern makers and different designers, my skills and my tastes just gotten better and better.
David, tell me about making a documentary. I don't know your past. Have you made other documentaries, or is this your first one that you're trying to?
I've done a lot of different short documentaries, and this was the first feature-length documentary. And the process was basically following Nari from start to finish. We did a lot of research up front. We spent a lot of time with the industry experts to try to get a real flavor for, you know, what was important to the story. And I think, you know, like I said, the most exciting thing about it was not knowing where the story was going to go.
Nari, he interviewed a lot of famous people in the fashion world, people you probably would love to know. Have you gotten to meet any of them because of this film?
Yes, I have. You know, Firm Alice. Mickey I met through, you know, a few times, just, you know, in the scene. And it was just it was great to meet him. And then Lynn Yeager. It was just great to meet her. So there was a lot of the people, you know, everyone who was in it, I was able to meet.
So tonight is the premiere. Are you looking forward to showing a Columbus audience what your life is like?
I am. I'm a little bit nervous, to be honest. I've got butterflies going on since yesterday. You know, it's a big hometown. Like, There's a lot going on right now.
Well, Dressed premieres tonight at the Drexel, and it's showing for 1 week only. So for more information, you can visit drexel.net and or you can visit wosu.org/allsides. We also have a link there. And there's a meet and greet with Nari and David tonight and others involved in the film. Right, David?
Yes.
And that's just about all the time we have for All Sides Weekend. So I want to say thank you to Nari Manavong. Thanks for being here, Nari.
Thank you so much.
And also thanks to David Swajewski, the director of the film. Thanks for being here, David.
Thank you very much.
And also thanks to Sal Pishinary for producing today. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories heard on WOSU comes from the law firm of Porter, Wright, Morris & Arthur, LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.